Louis Eriksson has agreed to a 6-year deal with Vancouver Canucks.
First time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Center ice, right?
And it's
baby!
Oh, and Skip has Poutier!
My contract sucks.
Dustin Bufflin's had a heck of a series, and Chicago in total control.
Yeah, this is all over. You can order the autopsy
with the
now.
Selection, Vancouver select from the London Knights, OAU Levy.
We're choked.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to I Hate This Team, a podcast about our love for the Vancouver Canucks. I am leftist Vancouver Canucks insider, Aaron Warner. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Stefan Heck. Stefan, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, this is our first episode. I'm very excited about it. I have been watching the Canucks again, so that's sort of been maybe kind of the worst part of my life at the moment. But other than that, you know, pretty solid.
What do you mean, you, man? There have been some good games.
Oh, my God. It's nuts. It's like this is the first year in, oh, my God, like almost a decade that I've been kind of like, I don't want to say like excited, but I've been going into the season like, okay, I'm going to watch all the games. I'm going to cheer for them to win. You know, like they're in sort of that middle gray area where they're not bad enough to tank for Bedard, or so I thought.
All right.
And they're not good enough to, you know, be like an actual cup contender. But let's go in and have some fun. And just the first two games have just been hell. Just like
absolute hell. Soul-sucking, man.
Oh, my God.
So I guess it would be very easy just to talk about what's happened so far. But maybe before we get into that, we can just talk about our relationship as Canucks fans, our relationship with the team. Why we decided to make a Vancouver Canucks podcast. I've been a lifelong Canucks fan since I was knee high in a grasshopper growing up in BC. And Stefan and I first met online when I was 12 and he was 13, I want to say.
Yeah. It was normal.
Yeah. It was on the Canucks.com forums.
Thank you for also saying my age and making it clear that I was like a similar age to 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a year older. 89 born.
That was like the prime of the West Coast Express.
Yeah.
That was Naslin Bertuzzi Morrison time.
I very vividly remember there was a trade proposal subforum on that message board.
Yeah.
And I proposed that the Canucks should trade both Sedins for Ryan Smith.
Oh, no.
We needed some of that Canadian leadership to bring that team together. So
yeah.
I'm happy Brian Burke was smarter than my 12-year-old ass.
It's fun, too, because you we've both sort of grown out of that sort of like very stupid trade proposal. And then you go on like HF boards now or like the Canucks subreddit or just Twitter. And there are just like grown adults making those trade proposals.
It's so funny.
Like, it's like totally. First of all, I feel like, you know, as a grown adult, making a fake trade proposal is already kind of insane on its face.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it, like, if you're going to do it, at least make it like a reasonable one. There are people, yeah, still making Sedins for Ryan Smith style trade proposals and like not seeing any issue with it.
I saw somebody on Twitter. I forget what they were even replying to. It was some, like, maybe it was a Drance tweet or maybe it was from the official Canucks page, but they suggested that the Canucks trade Brock Besser for a first round pick and a high end defensive prospect.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a really, they should do that. That's a really
like,
good
why
idea.
Why hasn't Alvin thought of that?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You could fix two problems
that
at one time.
Oh my God. I've seen people on HF boards, which is generally, I would say, like on the smarter end of the online hockey fandom spectrum, like generally speaking, compared to like Reddit or Twitter. But they're still saying stuff like, oh, we can trade Bo Horvat for a King's Ransom. King's Ransoms are like good. It's a good thing. Usually I just feel like, I mean, obviously every team's fan base is like this, but just the overvaluing of players on your own team. But anyway, we're talking about growing up as a Canucks fan.
Yeah.
We can get into this later.
Yeah. We lived through the West Coast Express era. I watched all 82 games. I remember staying home on New Year's Eve to watch a pay-per-view Vancouver Canucks game back when they had pay-per-view games.
Oh, dude.
Instead of going to a party in like eighth grade.
And that would have been the Flyers probably too, because they always used to play on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, diehard fan. 2011 kind of broke me.
Yeah.
That was real bad. I had just gotten my first big tax return from working my adult job, and I spent like $800 to go like for a ticket for game two, drove out there, and from Calgary, where I'm from, or not where I'm from, where I live. Anyways, Burrows wins it in OT. Oh, people are fucking dancing on Robson. It was,
oh my God.
It was so nice. And I remember coming back to work and, well, when they slayed the Dragon against Chicago in the first round of the opening series that year, I was like, okay, well, I'm a Canucks fan, and I know enough that, well, this is great, and it seems like they're finally over that hump, and they're going to make a run. They're just going to find the best way to break my heart.
Yeah.
And so I came back to work after going to game two, and they were up 2-0, and everyone was saying, oh my God, you must be so excited. Like, they're gonna win the cup. How are they going to lose 4 out of 5 games?
I remember actually believing that they were going to win the cup,
I at that moment was like, you know, logically, yes, I don't see how they could lose 4 of 5, including 2 at home, but I'm a Canucks fan and I think they're going to find a way to do it in the most painful way for me possible.
And they did. Yeah, yep. They did. No, I mean, I'm sort of in the same boat with 2011. I've been a fan since like the late 90s. I don't really remember anything about 94. My dad is a Canucks fan as well, unfortunately. Although he grew up in Ontario and was a Leafs fan growing up. I think he actually went to a Leafs playoff game in 1967.
Holy
shit. As a kid, which is pretty crazy. But once they moved up to Vancouver, he became a Canucks fan. So I got it from watching him, unfortunately. And I mean, it's been hell. It's been so bad. It's like, but I'm like stuck with them, you know? Like
There's
nothing I can do. The closest I've gotten to basically fully walking away from them was the last couple of years of the Jim Benning Canucks, where I was just like, I physically cannot take this anymore. And I stopped watching them for like 2 years, and it was great. It was like so good for my mental health. My skin got better. It was really good. And now I'm back on board for some stupid reason. And it's already paying dividends. They've already, I mean, when this episode comes out, I think they'll have played 3 games. I think they're playing tomorrow in Washington.
Yeah.
I can't see them winning that game. If they do win the game, it's Boudreaux's 600th career win, which would be kind of cool to do in Washington. Mm-hmm. But it's the Canucks. So, I think 2011, like you said, it was just, I mean, that basically ruined sports for me, I would say. Like, yeah, it just hasn't been the same.
I was still on board in 2012. I watched like as many games as I could.
Yeah.
But that playoff series against, that was LA that year, right?
LA. Yeah. That was bad. Yeah.
That was really bad. That was like a dagger. And then San Jose the year after.
Oh. I still remember the hit from behind call on the Sedin on Daniel, I think, in overtime of game 3 or 4. And just being like, okay, well, this is it. We're done here. This is not happening. But 2011, like, legitimately, I talked to, you know, John Cullen, my co-host
of course.
Blocked Party. He's a big Toronto Maple Leafs fan and obviously, you know, on some level understands sports pain, I would say.
Yes.
But like truly, even given what Leafs fans have been through, they do not understand. I would say they do not understand like true sports pain, which is getting as close as you can possibly get to winning it all and losing. Like it is so much worse to have any amount of hope to go far in the playoffs, to think, to actually like trick yourself into thinking they're finally going to do it, and just get the rug pulled out from under you. Like that's so much worse than them losing in the first round or choking a 4-1 lead or whatever. And don't get me wrong, those still suck.
No, they've still experienced
it's the
pain.
First round. Yeah. For sure they have, but Stanley Cup final pain is a different type of pain. Like it will, it will fully destroy you as not only a sports fan, but as like a human being. Like I was like an empty husk for several years after that.
And I would much rather be in a Maple Leafs fan's position now than a Canucks fan position. Not that I see Toronto necessarily getting any better. They're older. They're just as up against the cap, and their goaltending is worse.
Their goaltending is so bad.
Their goaltending is so bad.
Like, but when you're upset that Matt Murray is injured, you're in big trouble.
At least you get to watch like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner every night.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, maybe this is a more global thing about where I see the Canucks right now, but I just don't think they're that good, man.
They are not.
I guess another thing, because people listen to this podcast, maybe not diehard Canucks fans. You're just listening because of like Stefan and I and our other work.
Yeah. Or maybe you're a hockey fan in general. So
the Canucks last year, they started off fucking awful, like bottom three in the league in November, I think.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They finally fired Jim Benning, who.
Which. This is going to sound like an exaggeration, but no joke, that's like a top three moment as a Canucks fan for me. The day that happened, I straight up went to the liquor store at like 9 o'clock at night and got a little bottle of champagne and drank it at my computer by myself. It was really sad, but that's like the pinnacle of Canucks fandom to me. It just felt like a weight being lifted. It was so good.
Yeah, and so they hired Jim Rutherford as their president of hockey ops, who's won three cups as a general manager. Pretty well respected in hockey.
Yeah.
And they started, and they fired their coach, Travis Green, who I was okay with, but they hired Bruce Boudreau, who I've always really liked. And things were looking up. They went on a really good run. They narrowly missed the playoffs. They started doing stuff that they're doing again this year already, where they'd be hot and they'd look great, and then they'd play a team that they absolutely should beat, and they'd lose. Like they lost two games to Buffalo, two games to Detroit last year. I don't know if you remember that on that homestand where
before the trade deadline.
Yeah, they really could have gotten themselves into a playoff spot, and they just had to beat Buffalo and Detroit at home.
They've just like historically always done that. I remember, I want to say it was the 07-08 season where they somehow got swept by St. Louis that year, despite St. Louis being like the worst team in the NHL.
Yeah.
So they've just... they've just always been like that, I feel like. So it is, I mean, and they're doing it again this year. They've already started doing that with the Philadelphia game. So, and again, this could sound, you know, not completely insane because Canucks fans understand how bad it is being a Canucks fan, but you know, they could easily go out tomorrow and beat Washington like 4-0. Like they're such they're all over the map. Which is part of the, I don't want to say fun. I mean, I guess it is part of the fun of being a Canucks fan in a way is that you really never know what to expect. I mean, you can expect they're going to lose, but you don't always know how they're going to do it. And that's kind of the fun.
It is fun to sit back and just let it all wash over you and go along for the journey, which is why I've enjoyed getting back into it so much is, you know, it's two games into the season. It shouldn't be a huge deal, but they're 0-2. And they've lost both games in such spectacular fashion with like such expectations going into the year. Like the team's slogan is unfinished business and you blow a 3-0 lead and then a 2-0 lead on consecutive games.
The unfinished business thing is so funny to me because that's like what the Cincinnati Bengals slogan should be this year after losing in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Like what? So the business for the Canucks this year is to squeak into the playoffs as a wild card team and get destroyed by like Colorado in the first round. Or whatever. Like that's their unfinished business right now.
So
it's so good.
After that horrible start last year and a pretty good run, I think it was 106 point pace that they played at after they hired Boudreau. Going to the offseason with JT Miller and Bo Horvat, two of their top three centers, going into the last year of their contracts before becoming unrestricted free agents. And I can guess where you laid on who they should re-sign and who they should try and deal is probably the same as me. I thought if you could get Bo Horvat at a reasonable extension and trade JT for really anything, I don't dislike JT as a player, but he's going to be old as shit when this contract's over in 7 years. And,
he already does look a little checked out, but it's two games. Yeah. But, I mean, those two games, he was very checked out.
He's not been great. They're not sending their best folks. But yeah, I was hoping that they could get the cap space from not signing him and then some prospects. It doesn't have to necessarily be a defensive prospect, something. But no, they've re-signed Miller And Horvat is now walking into the season with no contract, which I'm really interested to see how all that plays out. I think probably in the most Canucks fashion possible is they're going to not trade him at the deadline, and then he walks for nothing after not accomplishing anything.
That sounds right, because they'll be kind of like chasing the wild card spot. They're like, well, we owe it to these guys to give them kind of one last chance to make the playoffs, and then they'll miss the playoffs and maybe, best case scenario, trade Horvat for like, trade the rights to Horvat for like a seventh round pick or something.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, obviously it was never going to happen, but I wanted both of them traded. And, cause if you're going to tank any year, this is the year to do it. Clearly there's like next to zero chance of that ever happening. Because if you're tanking, then, you know, Pettersson's going to want out, Hughes is going to want out, Demko's going to want, like,
that's,
you know,
the problem with this fucking team, man.
Yeah.
Is, like, I was expecting some wholesale changes. For anyone that doesn't know, Jim Rutherford, he was known as Trader Jim in Pittsburgh. When he was there for 5 years, he averaged a trade, what, every 6 weeks?
Yeah, crazy.
Something insane like that. And so we go into this offseason thinking, okay, well, there's going to be some sort of, like, big shakeup so this new management can put their stamp on the team. And nothing happened. They signed Ilya Mikheyev, who I like.
Yeah,
but
he got injured immediately.
Gets injured immediately. And I mean, it's probably too rich of a contract, but it is like speed and penalty killing is something the team desperately needed.
He'll be fine. Kuzmenko looks awesome. So
Kuzmenko looks
that.
Cool. I like that. That was a big get, or at least a big win. We'll see how he finishes the season, but he's looked good so far, especially in game one. And then they picked up Curtis Lazar for the fourth line, which again, I like, but the meat and potatoes, the bones of the team is exactly the same.
It's still the same. It's the same. I mean, I don't want to say like a loser core, but I mean, they really haven't done much. And
what have they fucking done?
It is very funny to hear anyone sort of bragging about the performance in the bubble. Like, that has any bearing whatsoever on where the team is at currently. Like the bubble playoffs. So the Canucks under Jim Benning made the playoffs. If we're being generous, they made the playoffs twice.
Yeah.
His first year when it was still Mike Gillis's team, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then Willie Desjardins with, I would argue, maybe the worst. Like, it's so hard. I feel like it's so hard as a coach to actually lose a game or a series for your team. But he fully lost the series for the Canucks there because he didn't line match at all. It literally was just 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. If you go back and watch it, it's incredible. Like, he let, like, Calgary as the away team, he let them match lines essentially against the Canucks. And it was insane to watch. So they made the playoffs that year officially. That was the last time they've had a home playoff game with fans in the stands. And then they made the playoffs in the COVID year, where if COVID hadn't happened, they almost certainly would have missed the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
And there would have been, I mean, you assume they would have cleaned house back then, and maybe that would have been the better way of doing things. They beat Minnesota in the play-in round, Minnesota without Kaprizov. Then they beat a flu/COVID-ridden St. Louis team that had won the year previous and was checked out.
Yep.
And then, thanks to Thatcher Demko, you know, took the Knights to, like, they, you know, they got outplayed, obviously, but
yeah, but Demko was great as Demko usually is, and
unreal, but you can't look at that and be like, oh, this team's ready to take the next step. This is a good team, you know? So anyway, it's, they're in the same spot. I mean, what I'm sort of not hoping for, because it would just be miserable to watch, especially the first year I'm like back following them again. And, but there was that, like, the Colorado year, where they made the playoffs, and I think lost in the first round, but they made the playoffs as a young team, and then the next year got, like, what was it, like 50 points or something?
Yeah, when they were historically bad, and
got, but it was a team that was, like, on paper not that bad, right? And then you know, they got, I believe that's the year they got Nathan MacKinnon. So I'm not saying that is going to happen, because we know the Canucks aren't winning a draft lottery, but it would be, I don't know. I would not be surprised if it's just a total shit show this year, especially because there are some expectations.
And I think that's the thing that's been hurting me the most, is in Colorado's last cycle of being awful, when they drafted like Cale Makar, That was the same draft that the Canucks drafted Quinn Hughes. They were both bottom feeders in that era.
Oh, that was the Pettersson draft, I think.
Oh, was it? But, oh, yeah.
Because that was, I'll give Jim Benning credit. I'll give Benning credit for one thing is that they apparently had Makar first overall that year. So
yes.
You know what? People say I'm too hard on Jim Benning. I'll give him that one. I'll give him that draft year. Having Makar, Pettersson, and Heiskanen that high up. Good work, guys.
Yeah. I mean,
thanks for everything.
Though, if you are drafting top 10, you should hit most of those picks. That's like, that's the easy part of the draft. The hard part is later. And they fucking never had any later picks because they kept trying to rebuild on the fly. And then you compare that to, the Colorado Avalanche, who didn't try rebuilding on the fly, and now they just won a Stanley Cup, and the Canucks are a middling, almost playoff team. And I just don't see the path to them getting to be a truly competitive team, even if they do limp into the playoffs, which is completely possible. We're two games into the season. Like, how do they get to that next level?
They seem to me... And I would love to be wrong about this. I would love for them just to like all take the next step. You know, we're two games into the season, whatever. I would love for them to prove me wrong. I would love for them to be a really good team that's like fun to watch and everything. But like how they have not earned the benefit of the doubt from anyone. They've been a bad team for so long, right? Like they have bad habits. They just seem like miserable sometimes, right? Like it's not, last year was a bit, you know, once the cloud of Benning was lifted, players seemed happier. They enjoyed coming to the rink again, whatever. But you know, two games into the year, it's just like, oh, we've seen this one before, right? Like,
yeah, no, it's all the worst shit from the beginning of last season all over again. And then the worst parts of like at any point last season, it's crazy to think that I thought, oh, maybe this will be different because they no longer have Juho Lamico and they have a few better wingers. But it just seems to me like I feel like such a stupid call-in sports radio fan for saying it, but this core doesn't know how to win.
I mean, all it takes is it's sports, right? It's total luck. It's totally random. Yeah. Like no one knows, it just happens, right? And the thing is, these players do all know how to win. They got drafted in the NHL. They're good players. They won, you know, they won in junior. They won in as like 12-year-olds in Adam, or you know, like they've won before. But it's totally like, there's all these narratives and everything. I was just looking. I put this together in the summer, I think, because there was sort of a narrative to go back to Jim Benning that he was like a very good like late round drafter,
right?
And it's very funny. I like put together a spreadsheet and like, I mean, he got some decent late round picks, you know? Let's see. I mean, Demko, the thing is to call someone like Demko a late round pick. I think he's a second round pick,
right?
He was picked 36th overall. Yeah. I believe he was the top ranked goalie in the draft.
Yeah.
But okay, we'll give it to him. It's outside the first round, you know, Hoglander was a second round pick. I mean, Rathbone, who knows, but he was a fourth round pick. Gaudette has, you know, he's played 200 games. He's a fifth round pick.
Of coffee. Yeah.
Forsling, who he traded away for Adam Clendenning. Forsling looks good. He was a fifth round pick. So there are players like that. But then you look at other teams, you look at teams that have been good, like consistently good. And, you know, you've got someone like Carolina, you know, Sebastian Aho in the second round, Dallas. I mean, Dallas, you've got Jason Robertson, right? Mm-hmm. Nashville, Sam Girard, Boston, Brandon Carlo. Like there's all like every team has picks like this, and the Canucks didn't necessarily have more than any other team. Like I would say they were middle of the pack at best, which is an improvement over Mike Gillis, but
yeah, that's a low that's bar. Very low bar, the Ron Delmore years.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's you know, part of me is I'm excited to be able to sit down on a weeknight after I'm done with the Go Off Kings and catch like the last two periods of a game now, you know, like I very stupidly signed up for Sportsnet Now, which is
I did the same thing.
One of the worst designed apps of
it's
all time.
So fucking awful.
What are you watching it on, by the way?
I'm using my Amazon Fire Stick.
Okay.
But it sucks because if you're watching it on your TV, you can't skip any more than 30 seconds ahead. Like, you can't actually scan the game. So if you want to go back and like just watch from the second period, you have to just click the 30-second button like 300 times to get there.
Yeah.
You can do it on your computer, which is fine.
Yeah.
I know they don't have a Roku app yet.
They don't. So I'm watching it on just Apple TV. I've got some friends watching it on their PS5s, and it's just like the video quality takes like a good like minute to like actually kick in to good quality.
It cuts out of it too.
It's brutal. And then like also the worst thing so far is when you click like watch live and it'll start at the beginning, I would say 50% of the time. Yeah.
And it buffers quite often as well.
Yeah.
When no other streaming service does for me.
If you're listening to this and you're not a hockey fan, first of all, thank you, I guess. But second of all, you should know that the NHL just like actively hates their fans and wants to give you the worst possible viewing experience. Case in point, the new digital board ads.
The digital board ads, man.
It's like when I first saw them, I was like, okay, like maybe this, we can ignore this, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're in the future and they're playing like a sport that doesn't exist in a movie and the ads are digital. Like, I get it. It's kind of cool.
But then you see the players start like clipping through them. And then obviously when they just completely glitch out and they're just like flashing between different ads and stuff, it's like really, like it ruins the viewing experience. You can't watch it. But even when they're working as intended, it's either an insane like animation of like, did you see the one of the puck rolling around the boards? Like the giant puck?
No, I didn't see that one.
So it was like as a player was like skating around the back of the net with the puck, and then this huge puck is coming along the boards like towards them, and it just like takes your eyes away from the game, right? So you're like, you're following the player, the puck, and then you see this other huge thing go rolling by, so you just look at that instead, and it's just like, it's so distracting. But then the other thing that's even worse is when it's just like a big like blank white space, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you saw in the Flyers game. Yeah, the Panago ad.
Yeah, I was going to say the Panago ad was so jarring because they'd have a camera angle that was like at the boards where you see the actual advertisements that are in Philadelphia for Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. And then it cuts out and it's this giant white Panago ad. Or the other really bad one was for the NHL fan store. And so it was just showing Canucks merchandise on the sideboards with the Flyers logo in the center of the ice.
Yeah. Oh, it looks awful. It's so bad. I mean, it honestly makes me appreciate the digital ads they put on the glass behind the net.
Oh,
those
are
way less distracting. Better. Yeah. I did see a really funny reply, which was someone was like complaining about how bad they were, like rightfully, saying like this ruins like the viewing experience or whatever. I think they posted the clip of the big puck rolling around the boards. And then someone replied and they're like, you know, the players don't actually see that, right? So they're like fine. like that was the problem. The players are going to get scared by the very big puck rolling towards them.
The other take I saw, I think this was about the Canucks getting ads on their helmets. And that one was, these players are already making $3.5 million on average. Why do they need more ad money?
It's nuts, man. That's such an insane thing to be mad about also. Like, it's one thing to like, people are going to be like, oh, it's a slippery slope towards like European leagues where they're just plastered in ads. First of all, maybe I'm the odd man out here, but I kind of like those. And maybe it's because I just like all of the weird European companies that are on the jerseys, but I don't hate those necessarily. But to complain about like the helmet logo, like it's going to ruin the sanctity of your viewing experience when there's like Aaron Paul promoting sports gambling like every commercial break.
Oh,
like,
God.
Man.
The sports gambling stuff's crazy. On Hockey Night in Canada last night, they cut to Cabby, which is that's his whole thing now.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, we don't do picks on Hockey Night in Canada, but here are the odds. They have the Toronto Maple Leafs as a 210 favorite to win this game.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, since I didn't really know how bad it had gotten until I started watching hockey again. I stopped watching the Canucks from like 2018 to 2020, like around there, like a 2 year period in there. But I was still watching like NHL hockey because we talked about this before we started doing the show, Aaron. But I'm in a really insane keeper fantasy league with John Cullen and a few other friends. And so just like watching hockey for that is like, it's so much fun, you know, it's, you know, I'm not like, breaking any new ground here, but fantasy sports are really fun when it's like a keeper league and you have like a farm team of like 10 young players and like you are fully role playing as a GM.
Yeah.
Especially when you're rebuilding like I am, like it's insanely fun, and it does allow you to kind of watch hockey in a way that watching the Canucks does not. Like, it allows you to enjoy watching hockey,
basically. Yeah, it enjoys you to watch good games as well. That's been like last night I watched the Edmonton Calgary game, and I guess to get back to the Canucks and the start of this season. So they started off against the Edmonton Oilers. They got out to a 3-0 lead very early. And that first period, I thought that they fucking ruled.
They looked good. They were so good at 5-on-5. They looked wonderful.
Yeah. I was thinking, okay, well, if this is the team and they can play at this level, like obviously it's not going to be this great for an entire season, but if this is the type of game that they can play against a top team like the Oilers, all right, they might be able to turn some heads this year. This could be fun. And that continued into the second period. They let in a shorthanded goal, and
after the first goal on the Evander Kane missed call.
Yeah,
at that point it was like, oh, they're going to collapse now because they're facing some adversity. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a horrible missed call, and the momentum should have swung completely their way because the Canucks would have had a 4-minute power play.
But the team was bad outside of like the refs missing a singular call.
Oh yeah.
And then that same with the goal they scored on the power play, that was like insane.
Oh, the tic-tac-toe
goal.
That was one of the best power play goals I've ever seen. That was fucking crazy. Yeah.
And then at 5-on-5, I thought they were still pretty good that period until the shorthanded goal. And then you're like, okay, well, this is how this is going to go. But I kind of chalk that up to like McDavid doing his thing and saying,
yeah, there's nothing, you cannot stop McDavid and Draisaitl. Like they're so, so scary. And I'm resigned to the fact that Edmonton is going to win a cup in the next like 5 years. Like I would be shocked if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It sucks, but
they still are the Edmonton Oilers, but
I know
it's a good team now, as much as
they're just so scary. Like McDavid's like, he's the best player of all time. Like he's so good. I've never seen a player like him. Like it's nuts. He's the best player since Lemieux, at least.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they lost in the third period, and they played like absolute dog shit. I believe the only scoring chance in that third period against Edmonton was Luke Shen.
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds like the Canucks.
Yeah.
But that game at least had some like promising moments.
I thought Patterson looked really good, especially in the first period.
He looked really good. 5-on-5, they looked good. Penalty kill was like, I mean, whatever, that's going to happen. But like the power play was the worrying thing because they were 1-for-8, I think, and let in the shorthanded goal. And so like, I mean, obviously the missed call affects that game, but like if you go 1-for-8 on the power play, the missed call wasn't the reason you lost.
Exactly.
You know?
And like I think the power play will get better. They have the personnel for it.
I'm not too worried about that. Yeah.
But yeah, it did look bad in that game. And then against Philadelphia, which Philadelphia should be like contending for Bedard this year.
Yeah. Even though they are trying to be good, like they remind me so much of the Jim Benning Canucks.
Yeah. No.
Right down to having, well, I guess Tortorella was Mike Gillis.
But that was his hand was forced in that one, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, then they go to play Philadelphia Flyers, and Philly looks bad. They look really bad, but they're still controlling play. They were really controlling play through the neutral zone. Vancouver gets up to the quick 2-0 lead off of rushes, which were good. I really like Podkolzin in that first period. He set it up beautifully to Garland when he scored. I thought Burrows had a good game last game as well.
He looks good. He reminds me of Bieksa when he first came up, sort of.
Yeah, maybe not as like bone crunching. Not as excited, because Bieksa when he first came up was like super exciting to watch.
Yeah.
I don't really get that from Burrows, but I do see what you mean.
He's like a tough guy a little bit. Like, yeah, sort of like a total like afterthought as well. So I do get a little bit of Bieksa vibes from him, and he was great. But I mean, that game was just, I went over to a buddy's house to watch it, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember why like I don't make Canucks games into like an event now, because it just like, it just completely saps your energy for like the rest of the day, having to like sit down and watch that. And like the winning goal where the puck just like hopped over Miller's stick was just,
Miller's looked really bad.
He's looked very bad. Yeah. I mean, two games. And again, we're recording before the Washington game. So maybe Miller gets a hat trick tomorrow.
Yeah.
And all the worries go away. That's going to happen a lot in this podcast, by the way, us looking like dickheads.
My worries are still there though, man.
Yeah.
Because like, even if they pull it together and make the play, like what is the logical conclusion for this team?
Oh, maybe getting to the second round.
Yeah, and just like even moving forward past this year, like how do they get better?
Yeah,
they actually get to be at a level where they can contend for a cup? Because there just isn't enough coming up that they can supplement what's currently on their roster to like bring forth a really competitive team.
No, they need to still trade for extra. Like, look at, again, I brought them up earlier, but a team like Carolina, who has been good for a while, and they just get picks. They just trade for picks. Chicago, when they were very good, just trade for picks. Get as many picks as possible. Just take as many, you know, throws at the dartboard as you can, right? Like, I'm not like a fucking NHL scout or anything, but it stands to reason that the more picks you have, the better chance you have of picking good players.
Yeah.
Right? That seems like fairly straightforward, simple logic. And it's just something that the Canucks have, like, for whatever reason, whether it's ownership or management or whatever it is, they've just never seemed to believe in that strategy or even considered it as a viable strategy. And we'll see. Maybe, you know, this year it's a big draft year. Like, this is like, this draft is shaping up to be like a 2015 or 2003. Like, it looks so
they
good.
They have most of their, they only gave up a seventh round pick, but they got a fourth round pick for Tyler Motte. So we'll see if they move any of them or I don't know if they do trade Bo Horvat midseason, which I think is highly fucking unlikely.
I really hope they do. Yeah. I mean, do you have any like major predictions for this season for maybe for the Canucks and then just like NHL predictions in general?
No, because what I'd like to see happen, I think, is too much of a reach.
Yeah.
So the sense that I get is that Alvin and Rutherford, they're like competent Jim Benning.
Yeah. I was getting some flashbacks, some Benning, like with the Miller re-signing, you know, he's like a good player, but it just seems like one of those ones where it's like, well, what is your plan moving forward? Like, what is your plan when, you know, 4 years from now? When JT Miller is 4 years older, like what's your plan? And I mean, they're not going to obviously come right out and say it, but with good teams, you can sort of see what they're building towards, right?
Yeah. You can get why the Maple Leafs signed Tavares to that deal, knowing in 4 years from now, it's going to be bad, but look at all these hot young players that we have. Yeah. We can make a run, and like, obviously it hasn't planned out for them so far, but the reasoning was sound.
Yeah.
With the Canucks, it's like they've thrown all this together. They're a capped out team. Their defense is fucking horrible. They might be able to squeak into the playoffs and get a couple of home games. Maybe they're lucky and get to the second round somehow. But this isn't a team that's challenging for the cup.
No, it's a team that really reminds me of like the, you know, 2010s, like Calgary Flames or like Minnesota Wild, where it's just like, yeah, second round is sort of your ceiling, you know, mediocrity, making the playoffs, you know, making the playoffs semi-consistently, but not like actually making a run. And it's just like, I mean, they haven't come right out and said it, but like Jim Benning would like explicitly say like, oh, you can make the playoffs. Anything's going to happen. You know, anything can happen. And that was the classic, like that was the classic, like dumb fan thing. And they pointed a team like LA winning the cup as an eighth seed. Right. But like, that was not a typical eighth seed. That the underlying numbers showed that that was one of the best teams in the league. They were on just an absolute heater, and yeah, they were an eighth seed, but they weren't an eighth seed. You know what I mean? Whereas like, you know, if the Canucks make it as a wild card team, yeah, I think Demko could steal them around for sure. I mean, he almost did against Vegas. So it's entirely possible, but it's like, you can't rely on that as your strategy. And again, it's like, we're less than a year into the Rutherford regime. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe they have some stuff planned. Like, I legitimately would not be surprised if we see like a trade this week, if they lose their first four games. Right. So things could totally happen. My prediction for this year, I think they'll trade Horvat. I can't, I just, if you re-sign him, It's just like, okay, this is it. This is the team, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think they have to shake it up on some level. So my prediction is they will trade Horvat for, a defenseman, hopefully, but there just aren't that many. If you're looking for like a right-handed defenseman, it's just not going to happen.
Even if you get like a hot defensive prospect for Horvat, then who's your third line center?
I guess it's Curtis Lazar.
Yeah.
He's looked okay.
I think Lazar's look good. I think Oman, that whole fourth line's look quite good.
They have,
but
yeah.
The problem with getting rid of Horvat is then they're going to be missing a good third line center. So
yeah,
it's kind of like
you bring up like
get
Linus Karlsson or something maybe. And like, but
he's Karlsson's winger, right? Like I know that whole fourth line right now is technically centers, so you can do it, but suddenly having like a, you know, Podkolzin, Lazar, Garland third line doesn't look nearly as
for
good
sure
as having Horvat up there. So
like the Canucks have very good center depth. It's like I would say top 10 center depth in the league. It's like a bottom
on the team,
10
but there's nothing
in the league,
there's
so
nothing coming up that could help replace any of it, which is the major problem with this team. I think like you need someone that's like can step into those shoes and maybe they'll shine given a bigger opportunity.
Which is why this draft is like just so, so important, because there's so many high end forward prospects in like the top half of the first. I mean, just in the whole first round, really. But like, you know, if the Canucks miss the playoffs and they're picking close to top 10 and they can get a guy like, Matthew Wood, it would be huge, right? I mean, obviously you need to have like probably at this point like a top 3 or 4 pick to get someone like Leo Karlsson from the SHL, but like the prospects. And by the way, it is sort of a nice change, because usually I'm looking at prospects a year in advance because the Canucks suck total ass and the year is a complete write-off. This time it's because my fantasy team sucks total ass and the year is a whole write-off, so it's a bit of a different vibe. But like just looking at this draft as like as just an amateur, you know, hockey fan, it looks fucking insane, and it looks like you can get, you know, a really, really good prospect in the first round. So, you know, I would not be upset if they missed the playoffs this year.
Speaking of fans just making trade proposals. So if you get like a first round pick and some pretty good defensive prospect back for Horvat in a second, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question. I don't think they could get a first for Horvat.
You don't?
At least like, not a 23 first. I think they could get a 2024 first, probably.
It seems to me like the league has a lot of reverence for Horvat still.
That's true.
To like when the Olympics were going to happen, and Friedman said he expected him to be like a fourth line center.
Yeah.
Because I think people perceive Horvat as being a good defensive shutdown guy, which he isn't. I like him. He seems like a good guy. He can score goals. Nothing
he scored some very nice, important goals for the Canucks over the years. Like but it's just when it comes down to it, like you're signing him for what, like $7.5 million for 7 years, 8 years. Like that's not a good contract.
Not worth. And it's especially not worth after you gave that money to JT already.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if they'd
really
gotten something back for JT, then I'm like, yeah, of course sign Horvat for that. He's seems like a good leader, blah, 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 which fucking JT Miller, man. We got to talk about him and his fucking Blue Lives Matter ball cap hanging out with Chad Kroger.
That was so funny. I mean, I think you can safely assume that like 90% of NHLers, well, 95% of NHLers are like right wing cop loving guys.
Yeah.
I think that's, and especially the North American ones. But that was still so
Garland
funny.
Garland deleted his Twitter.
Did he?
Yeah, I thought a fun little segment on our show could be going through his fave tweets, but it's not fucking there anymore.
Oh, my
God. Connor Garland, who's a winger for the Canucks, he's American. His faves were something to behold. He'd be like...
They were really rough.
Yeah, but he was like... He faved like Glenn Greenwald stuff, despite being pretty pretty right way. He's like one of those guys. Probably because like... I don't want to turn my Canucks podcast into talking about Glenn Greenwald, but
no.
So I saw that. I'm like, God damn, it sucks that Bo's probably going to be the one to leave. He seems way, way more chill to hang out with.
But. I know. Yeah, no, that's my Canucks prediction for this year is they'll trade Horvat. I think the thing with this draft as well is that it's not, I mean, it's so early on, so obviously this could change, but there aren't really that many defensive prospects in the first round. It's like really, really forward heavy. But I mean, the Canucks need help everywhere, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, no, if they,
you know, if picking a defenseman for positional needs is how you get Ylevi. So, yeah. And then my NHL prediction, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm going to just say, I'll say Carolina to win the Stanley Cup.
I like
those guys for a while. Yeah. They're a fun team. They're the team I wish I was a fan of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're run by like, they have smart management. They have ownership that seems to kind of be hands off for the most part. And they have just a very fun young team. So yeah, my pick is I'm going to say Carolina Calgary in the Stanley Cup finals with Carolina.
Oh man, I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
I like those. Maybe the Rangers as well. Rangers have looked really good so far this season.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was listening to fucking Canucks talk.
Yeah.
And Drance was, he always compared like the Rangers last year to like the very height of the Canucks with great goaltending, good power play, not an elite team. And then so far this year, the Rangers look like an elite team.
Yeah.
And I guess some scouts reached out and were like, yes, the difference with the Rangers and the Canucks is they have young players that can get better.
Yeah.
Kaapo Kakko, DeAndre Miller,
Lafreniere.
Yeah. So the Canucks don't have anybody really at that level that can step up and do better. I really like Pod Colson.
He looks good this year, too.
He played the least amount of minutes of any four yesterday.
And it's the same thing with Hoglander, where I thought he had a pretty good game against Philly. Like, I mean, he was fighting the puck a little bit, but he was there.
But he was forechecking well.
Yeah, and now he's off the power play and on the fourth line. So, I don't know. I mean, my other prediction is that and this is not that outlandish if they get off to a bad start. Like if they're 0-5 before their home opener, I think they'll fire Boudreaux.
Yeah. Well, because he's not management's guy.
No. He's just on a 1-year deal, right?
Yeah, like this is his last year.
And they like didn't seem to want to extend him at all.
No.
So yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't wanna say excited for this year, but I am looking forward to following the Canucks closely again, because no matter what happens, it will be entertaining.
It's emotional. It's exciting. Yeah. And there's always next year. There was something I wanted to get your take on that I almost meandered into this point earlier. But yeah, last night I watched Edmonton and Calgary, which was a great game.
Yeah.
It was exciting. It was back and
forth. Two very good teams.
Two very good teams in our division. And yeah, both super fun to watch as well. And something I've been thinking about a lot recently is during like the 2011 years, and even dating back to the West Coast Express, you'd have the Sedin line come on and you could almost like relax for a minute because you knew that they were going to be completely in control and you knew that the other team would have to just try and contain them and shut them down. Also, similar things happened with like the Kessler line when the West Coast Express would come over. I don't get that sense at all from anybody on the Canucks.
No, and not at all.
Like, maybe Pettersson had it as a rookie, and that shift where he scored against Edmonton was like, oh yeah, this is the guy.
Yeah.
And he's what, 24?
Yeah, I mean, he's still young. Like, I think he can still, I love Pettersson.
Yeah,
I was,
of
like,
course.
I was banging the drum. I mean, I've since deleted all the tweets on the old Hockey Dipshit account, but I was banging the drum to draft Pettersson in like March of that year.
Right.
And I remember, you know, Jason Botchford, rest in peace, would like quote tweet and be like, this guy knew, you know? So that's like my one sort of like hockey take that I've ever been correct on, you know? I think he's still capable of doing it, but it's like, he's not surrounded by, there's just no one, like it's like you said, the Sedin line, you know, the Kessler line, even the West Coast Express, obviously like McDavid and Draisaitl now, like you get that feeling where it's just like, oh no, like as an opposing fan, you're like,
yeah,
we're fucked when these guys are on the ice. And with the Sedins and Edmonton over the years, it was the same for Oilers fans. Like talking to them, like they were terrified every time they came on the ice. Right. So there's just, you're right. Like there's no line like that where it's like, I think you put it nicely where you can relax because now it's just like, no matter what's happening, I'm always worried something stupid is going to happen to the Canucks. And usually it does. So.
Do you think with the component parts they could build that line? Like by getting like a Lotto line back together or...
I mean, I love...
Kuzmenko, Pettersson, Besser or something. Because I guess in practice this morning they switched JT and Bo around. So now Bo's with Pearson and Besser, and then JT's skating with Podkolzin and Garland. But that's just shuffling parts.
Yeah, I think like a line that I could, I mean, it's super early, obviously, but I could see like a Kuzmenko, Pettersson, Podkolzin line being really, really fun. Because those are all, it's also like those guys have like personality and are like fun guys to just like to watch as well. Mm-hmm. So like, I think I could see that working potentially. Kuzmenko has looked good. Podkolzin looks really good this year. Pettersson looks good as usual. And I think that would be like a decent defensive line too. I don't know about Kuzmenko as much, but Pettersson's really solid defensively. Podkolzin has that style of play where I think he could be solid
he's got
defensively.
That big body. He's looked really good on the setup as well so far this year.
Yeah, the pass to was it the pass to Garland?
Garland
in
yeah.
Philly. That was a great little play. Like he's, I don't know. He seems like he's stepped it up this year. Like I said, Kuzmenko looks good. So that to me is the potential line. Besser, I just like. I don't know. I mean, obviously he had a really rough year last year because he was going through a lot of shit off the ice.
And he broke his hand. He just had
and like, he broke his hand.
Yeah, he just had the hand surgery. So you can kind of make excuses for him. But
for sure. Yeah.
He's another. There's for the Canucks to be at all good and like be a true playoff team. Guys have got to take like the step forward that we as fans think they have or that they show in flashes.
Yeah.
And it just again through two games. Doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, it's like we keep saying it is early, obviously, but it's one of those things where, like, in order for the Canucks to even just make the playoffs as a wild card team, so many things need to go right.
Yeah,
you know, and so many things need to go wrong for other teams too. That's the other thing I find that, and maybe this is something that just probably happens with fandoms in general, but Canucks fans, I feel like, especially do this where they almost act like the Canucks exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, they have three good centers. They have Quinn Hughes, they have Thatcher Demko. They're going to be fine. And it's like, have you seen other teams? Do you know other teams exist and they are much, much better?
Center depth?
Yeah. It's one of those things where even if everything goes right for the Canucks this year and they make the playoffs, you know, I like we said, we could see them winning around. And look, I would love for this to be replayed like 6 months from now. And we're eating our words.
Oh
and
man, I would love the conference nothing final. More than the Canucks to be fucking good.
Oh,
be
great.
That'd be so nice.
And it could happen. It's the season has just started. It could totally happen. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna kind of come on this journey with us throughout this season. It's gonna be insane. It's the Canucks. So you can rest assured it's going to be very stupid and very entertaining. No matter what happens. But I think I am excited for this year. I can't believe I'm saying that.
You know what the Canucks are like? They're like a mind of JSON meal where there's all these like good ingredients, right?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, Pettersson, he's great. Hughes, great. Demko, awesome. It's like, okay, eggs, chicken, rice, American cheese. These are all awesome ingredients. Yeah. Then you throw in your fucking, there isn't even anybody on this team that I hate. Like you said, Poolman or something, Myers. That I don't hate them. They're just
they're entertaining.
Their,
and it's not their fault. They got.
But somehow, when you put it all together and you cook it, it's fucking disgusting. It looks like shit.
Well, and speaking of Mind of Jason, it sort of fits as like because I feel like a lot of Canucks fans look at the Canucks like Jason looks at a 2021 Michael Madsen movie where they're like, oh, this is the best movie ever. And it's like a direct to DVD, like 1 star, 10% on Rotten Tomatoes thing. And it's like, you know, there are like other better movies out there. You don't have to pretend this shit is good. Right. And that's something I've really noticed that recently with Canucks fans where they just have such like low expectations.
Meaningful games in what was it, March?
March. Fucking March. That's not even the playoffs. Oh God. And they did play meaningful games last March, so I'll give them that.
Yeah, but. They accomplished their goal. And they've got unfinished business.
Yeah.
He's 2:45 and it looks like the watching sheet. Here he comes. I said, it's called the Todd Bertuzzi. Called the Todd Bertuzzi. It's called the Todd Bertuzzi. Tommy Lashide calls him babe. A raging bull is another babe. And Marcus Nassler sets him up. This junkyard dog ain't no fun. Here he comes, got the moves a little doozy. He's spinning all around, getting everybody woozy. He's 245 and it looks like the Watusi. I said, it's called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 calls the goalie Susie. He's super bird, yeah, he's number one. His highlight goals are so much fun. He gets the clapper out of his seat, a dancing to the beat. Here he comes, he's got the moves of Leonard Doozy. He's spinning all around, getting everybody woozy. He's 245 and it looks like the Watusi. I said, it's called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 called the goalie Susie. Here he comes, he's got the moves of Leonard Doozy. He's spinning all around, getting everybody woozy. He's 245 and it looks like the Watusi. I said, it's called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 calls the goalie Susie. Oh yeah, it's called the Todd Bertuzzi. 44 calls the goalie Susie. Oh yeah, makes every